This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Self Matters, Creating Your Life from the Inside Out by Philip C. McGraw, Ph.D. Read by the author.
The sun beat down relentlessly on the young man standing in the barren parking lot. There was not a breath of air, and the black asphalt was sticky and melting as it gave way to the afternoon heat. It radiated up into his face like a blast furnace. He wouldn't be here using a payphone, except that he was out of town, and this was one call that absolutely had to go through an operator. Over the years, he had placed collect calls back home many times, but this one was entirely different. This time, he instructed the operator to be sure to emphasize that the call was from Doctor rather than Mister. How strange it sounded to hear her say Doctor in front of his name when his father answered at the other end. It was Doctor Son calling Doctor Dad, an achievement that had been so very long and hard in coming. 11 years, to be exact. 300 hours of college credit, tens of thousands of pages read and studied, and hundreds of all-nighters in preparation for nearly as many tests and exams. No less painfully, there had been the days, weeks, and months of dealing with a variety of insecure, emotionally interesting professors, many of them white-coated Napoleons who were all too eager to wield the power of their petty fiefdoms. Their torments had culminated in that unforgettable final year, when he had walked the halls at school and put in his time at the hospital, armed with a signed letter of resignation on his clipboard, daring just one more anal-retentive, power-hungry, mentor-turned-tormentor to say so much as boo to him. In spite of it all, and as surprised as anyone who knew him, here he stood. He remembered one of his favorite profs telling him that he would never make it because he had an attitude and refused to kiss ass. He was told, "You have too many options in your life to put up with this fiasco of dysfunction. You aren't near desperate enough to tolerate the abuse." Yet, here he was. One by one, the department heads had signed off on his final requirements, shaken his hand, and congratulated him on earning the highest degree in his profession. Doctor, wow! He knew how proud his dad was going to be. This phone call would be a huge step closer to his father's dream come true. Father and son, both doctors, practicing together, side by side. Throughout the long ordeal, he had been powerfully influenced by his knowledge of his father's vision and dream. Theirs was a family of meager and simple beginnings. In fact, the young doctor and his father were the only ones from either side of the extended family ever to go to college, let alone become doctors. Surely then, this phone call was to be a proud moment indeed. The long journey was over. Victory was at hand, and his parents and family were bursting with pride. It was all queued up just right. Ready and waiting for him was a thriving practice, all set to explode with the energy and inspiration he would bring. That meant no more scrounging for money for him and his young wife. No more driving cars that were beyond old. No more living in apartments so small you had to go outside to turn around. Most importantly, the young doctor truly did care about helping people, and here was his chance to do just that. So there couldn't be anything wrong with any of this, right? Yet standing in that parking lot, mouthing the words of expected excitement, even as he heard his father's voice breaking with unmistakable pride, he looked over at his wife waiting in the car. There sat the only person in the entire world who knew him well enough to know that something was wrong. How could everything be so right yet feel so wrong? He looked into her eyes. Without speaking a word, he knew that she knew. But he would play the good soldier. He would shrug off the negative feelings and forge ahead. Soon he would be scrambling so fast that life would crowd out the nagging thoughts, and he would focus instead on meeting the expectations held by so many who loved him. He told himself it was probably just anxiety anyway, nothing a little hard work wouldn't take care of. So with a healthy dose of dutiful self-righteousness, a work-your-butt-off commitment, and a naivete that can only come from being young and stupid, he prepared to go to work. There were those doubts, and there was that vague uneasiness about the road he had started down. That nagging sense that something just wasn't quite right continued. But hey, he was going to make a lot of people really proud. At the same time, he made a heartfelt promise to himself. I don't care how much money I get to making. If I ever find myself doing this just for the money, if I am ever just going through the motions, I am out of here. I will turn on my heels and walk smooth away. I will never sell out and live without passion and fire just because it's secure, expected, or easy. I'm no one-trick pony. If I can succeed at this, I could succeed at a lot of things just as well. No problem. 10 years later. 10 years and thousands of patients later, the not-so-young, not-so-stupid, and not-nearly-so-naive doctor and his wife step off of a client's private jet at a busy airport in the heart of a teeming, fast-paced city. It is a crisp and beautiful Sunday afternoon in October. His practice has exploded to perhaps the largest in the country. He has mastered his profession. Successful? Yes, certainly by any standard he knows of. A secure lifestyle? Without a doubt. Houses and cars? Only the best. 2 great children, a wonderful marriage, and proud parents. He has it all. So why doesn't it feel any more right than it did 10 years ago when he stood at the payphone in that hot, deserted parking lot? His self-righteous declaration of 10 years ago haunts him more and more. He has often wished he had never said it. There are those dreadful times when the truth runs faster than he can. It is particularly bad when he is really tired or in those rare moments when he has allowed himself to become very still. He has hated those times because it's then that his private reality mocks him. If I ever find myself doing this just for the money, if I'm ever just going through the motions, I'm out of here. I'll never sell out. I will never live without passion and fire just because it's secure, expected, or easy. The promise haunts him because he knows that money and lifestyle have in fact bought him, just as he swore they would not. Far from being vitally involved in his own life, he feels trapped by it. There is a part of him that remembers what it was like to have passion, hope, optimism, and energy. It is a part that has refused to succumb to and accept the roles assigned by an insensitive and sometimes hurtful world. It is a part of his concept of self that just wants to get in the game he wants to play. A game that means something to him, whether it means anything to anyone else or not. It is a private, usually denied part of himself that does not want to be controlled by what is expected. It is a part of him that knows what is genuine, yet it is a part that usually lives in silence. The simple truth is that he is not living a life that he wants or that he chose. He is living a life that pleases a lot of people, most of them well-intended, but not him. He is doing what he does simply because it is what his father did. He is living in a place he did not consciously choose. In fact, it is the last place on earth he would have ever chosen. He has a life many would love, but his heart isn't in it. It's not natural for him, so he has to do what he does by brute force. Everything is a chore. There is no passion. There is no excitement. He ignores his real dreams, but doing so is hard and getting harder. Being someone and something he is not is the hardest thing he has ever done. Clearly, this is not some monumental tragedy. I mean, come on, poor baby has to be a doctor. It is not some kind of cause célèbre that makes the evening news. Could he just get happy? After all, his marriage and family are great. Could he be satisfied with that and just keep on keeping on? Yes. But it gets harder with every day that passes. Days that have turned into weeks, months, and years. He rationalizes that he really would make a change, give it all up and pursue something he truly has a passion for. But he has responsibilities. He has a wife and kids, for God's sake. How could he ask them to give up their friends, schools, and lives just so he can chase some dream? And then the precise moment when he is wrestling with those thoughts, his wife says, "Where were you just now? You have to tell me what you're thinking. Tell me where you go when you're lost in that 100-yard stare." And for some reason on this beautiful afternoon, driving across town with the top down and the cool autumn air breezing through the car, he decides once and for all to stop denying himself. He decides to give his feelings a voice and tell the truth. Bottom line, I'm going jackass batty in here. I hate to tell you this, but I think a huge part of my life absolutely sucks. I hate myself for getting in so deep that I feel like I can't get out. I hate my career. I hate where we're living. I hate what I'm doing. I've hated it since before the day I started it. I sold myself out and gave in to what everyone else wanted for me, not what I wanted. I have zero passion for what I'm doing. I'm just going through the motions, and it's getting harder and harder every day. I should be excited about my life, but I'm not even close. I'm cheating you and the boys because I'm not being me. I have one shot at this, one shot, and I'm choking. I'm blowing it. I'm now almost 40 years old. I've wasted 10 years of my life, and I can't get them back no matter what I do. To even say that makes me sick to my stomach. I don't want to rock the boat, but I hate this deal. And if it were up to me, I would shut this whole thing down, move away, and do something I want to do in a place where I want to do it. I'm sorry, but that's the truth. I feel like a fraud. I'm sorry to dump all of this on you, but you asked, so I'm telling you. I'm running out of life energy here. I'm tired of being tired. I'm tired of not waking up excited in the morning. I'm tired of not being proud of what I do or who I am. It's no one's fault but my own. I've done it to myself because I didn't have the guts to stand up for me. How dumb is that? I gotta tell you, I know every detail of this story, including what was said in that car, because I was in that car. The story, the confession, is my own. I was the young doctor who stood in that parking lot in 1979, and it was me who drove out of Love Field in Dallas, Texas with my wife, Robin, in 1989. For those 10 years, I had lived a life of incongruency. The content of my life, the choices I had made, were incongruent with who I was and what I wanted. I was doing things I didn't have my heart into and was not doing the things I did have a passion for. On the one hand, I occupied the comfort zone, where my life felt safe because it was as steady and predictable as the ticking of a clock. The problem was that everything I was doing was chosen to please other people by meeting their expectations while totally ignoring my own. Ultimately, I was able to totally re-engineer those parts of my life that were not me and build on those that felt right because they were right. Once I stopped living that incongruent life and started to hear my own voice, my own needs, my experience of life changed monumentally. I didn't get those 10 years back, but they are a fading memory, daily being replaced with a life that is authentically me. I'm going to tell you a whole lot about how I did that very, very soon. I will never completely forget the pain and emptiness of living the way I did for those 10 years, and I don't want to. Having spent 10 years in that desolate territory, I know it's a place where I will never go again. I would starve or work for food and shelter doing what I love before I would betray myself again at any price. If you have ever done anything that was really dumb for a long time and then finally quit and made a change, you know exactly what I'm talking about. You look back and say, "Oh my God, How could I have been so stupid? I wasted so much time. I know the feeling, because I've even had that revelation about trivial things in my life. Bottom line, I got out. And if you are in that place, I want you to get out too. Now don't panic. I'm not getting ready to blow up your marriage or your family. Living an incongruent life doesn't necessarily involve geography, occupation, time commitments, or even the people with whom you're sharing your life. The fix I'm talking about comes from the inside out. What it does always deal with is how you do what you do. It always deals with you being true to yourself from the inside out. I still do a lot of what I once did. I just do it very, very differently, and the priorities are mine, not someone else's. Okay, I got an important question for you. Is it possible that just like me, you have a great chance for a tremendously more satisfying and exciting life, but you're selling yourself short and missing out because you don't know it? Or if you do know it, you're just stuck in your life and aren't doing anything about it. Is it possible that you are, in fact, an excitingly unique individual with the need to do and be all of who you are, yet you are denying that powerful individuality and remain bogged down and buried in a world of responsibility traps and don't make waves conformity? Well, I'll confess that I'm setting you up, because those are loaded questions, and I'm betting the answer to both is in whole or part a big fat yes. If I'm right, your self-concept is in trouble, and you're cheating not only yourself, but your children, your spouse, and everyone else in your life, just like I was. Keep listening and we'll see if I'm right. If I am right, don't despair, because I promise I'm about to save you those 10 years that I wasted. Together, you and I are about to light your life up like you can't believe. Now, let me give you a warning here. This is an extremely direct, plain-talking, tell-you-the-unvarnished-truth, common-sense audiobook about how to take control of your entire life. The control I'm talking about is a control that comes from reconnecting with what I call your authentic self. In order to understand what I mean by your authentic self, you need only think back to the times in your life when you have been your very best. I'm talking about the absolute happiest time in your life, the most fulfilled, and especially the most real you have ever been. Think back to the you at the heart of those moments. In those moments, your life flowed with an energy and excitement. At the same time, you may have felt a quiet calm within yourself. You may have been at work, but work was play. You probably felt as if you were exactly where you were supposed to be, doing just what you were meant to do, and with exactly the right people. There was no room in your life for fear or anxiety or self-doubt. Every part of your life was in harmony with the other parts. You were living fully in the present moment. Yet you had a sense of optimism, an expectation that tomorrow was going to be just as interesting and gratifying as today. Perhaps most important was the fact that you accepted yourself for who and what you were. The result was kind of a bulletproofing from the judgment of others. Because you felt so good about yourself, because you felt self-determined and in control, you couldn't care less what others thought about you. It was you that mattered. Not in a selfish way, but in a confident way. Connecting with this authentic self again means finding your way back to the, no kidding, real you that existed before the world started crowding you out. This is a control that again comes from the inside out. That means that this is all about you, no one else, just you. This is a how-to program that is designed to get you excited about and filling your life with what is genuinely important to you instead of a lot of mindless, inherited, assigned, go-through-the-motions activity. It means putting your life together in a way that you can respect yourself for who and what you do. Look, life is a bitch and then you die is not my idea of a good philosophy or life strategy. If you want to be totally, consciously in charge of you and everything you think, do, and feel, and use that control to create value for you, and therefore for everyone around you, you've come to the right place, but there is work to be done. You see, I have a theory. I believe that you, me, all of us, have in the past and or are currently screwing up this game we call life. Too many people in this day and time have gotten so busy getting by, so busy being busy that they have let the colors fade from their lives. They've settled too cheap, way too cheap. Think about it. Your life behind closed doors can totally suck. It can be a major train wreck. Yet you will get up in the morning, and instead of working on your mind and your heart for even 5 minutes, you will obsess around for 2 hours focusing totally on your appearance instead of your substance. You do it all throughout your life. You would do well to stop and think about just how much of your life energy is absorbed by the superficial rather than what you know in your heart really matters. A good example is found in our approach to tying the knot. I see tons of couples getting married every year, and I'll bet 90%+ of them spend months or even years planning their wedding and almost no time planning their marriage. Your life is created from the inside out. So you must get right with you on the inside, and that takes time and focus on you. Not your social mask, but you. This stuff about self, about who you are on the inside matters. It really matters. Why? Because a life without color is a life without excitement and passion. It's a gray existence where you put one foot in front of the other and go through the motions without any emotions. You spend all your energy meeting expectations and doing jobs and chores. You stop really living and instead start existing. You get up, feed the kids, worry about money, go to work, come home, do the laundry, cook dinner, worry about kids, mow the yard, worry some more about money, watch TV, eat some more, worry some more, go to bed. Then you get up and do it all over again, and again, and again, and again, 365 days a year. Make no mistake about it. When chores, routine existence, and just playing it safe become the only purpose in life, there is no purpose, and one must be found. You need to know your highest and best use in this world, and then pursue it. How tragic would it have been if Einstein had spent his life as a merchant or a sailor? If Elvis had remained a truck driver? If Mother Teresa had been an accountant or a waitress? When mindless, unchallenging, routine existence and safety are blindly accepted and become unthinking goals, there can be no authenticity, because you and everyone else has a mission, a purpose in life that cannot be denied if you are to live fully. If you have no purpose, you have no passion. If you have no passion, you've sold yourself out. I know that because I know that within each of us there are passions that, if acknowledged and released, will energize and excite the experience of life. In a passionless life, superficiality becomes a substitute for things that ought to matter. False goals like money, approval from others, and the accumulation of stuff will come to dominate your life and its energy. You are then trapped in a descending circle of aimless existence. If you are committed to nothing, if you believe in nothing, including yourself, you can be led to and suckered into anything. Now, you may be convinced that your life never had any color or passion to begin with. But if it did, can you remember it? Reflect on that and then ask yourself, how much have you let those colors fade? It may have been hard to notice because it happened a little bit at a time, just a bit here and there. Either way, whether you never had it or you had it and it faded, have you gone from a life that was in full living color to one that is nothing more than shades of gray? Ask yourself, how long has it been since you were really excited about some meaningful aspect of your life? I'm not talking about the excitement of getting a new car or a piece of jewelry or a great fishing pole. I'm talking about the passion and excitement of knowing you are filling your purpose and are doing it well. I'm talking about the feeling of confidence that comes from self-trust. The calm assurance that you experience when you know that you have the courage to be who you really are and be there for yourself when it really counts. Hey, here's a gotcha. Are you one of those people who sit around and talk about how crazy and fun you used to be? Do you reminisce about times gone by, often saying, "Remember when we used to..." Do you just accept the fact that the most fun and fulfillment you will ever have is in your past, because now you have responsibilities and bills and kids and whatever else you can think of to rationalize neglecting yourself and what matters to you? Well, let me tell you, if that's how you think, that's just crazy. The only reason you would want to continue focusing on some fantasized past is if the present you have created is not good. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be 20 again. Here's how the deal is supposed to work. As we get older, we are supposed to be more competent, not less. Life is supposed to get better because we're supposed to be better at it. Now, you may be thinking, "Oh, great. I thought I was doing fine until I bought this damn audiobook. Now you're telling me I only thought I was happy. Thanks a lot." Sorry, but as your parents always said, you'll thank me for this someday. The only difference is, this time it's true. Just hear me out. And if when you finish you conclude that you are in fact happy and doing just fine, then great. At least then you will know it with the confidence of having audited your life, mind, and spirit. But I'm betting you're going to be shocked at what you find and ultimately be thankful that you got a wake-up call. And boy, oh boy, do I intend to give you a wake-up call, because I don't want you to sleep through your life like I did for 10 years. I think a lot of this losing ourselves has happened because our world has sped up to the point of being absolutely out of control insane. It has sped up to the point of so overstimulating us with input from the outside that we can't or don't even hear any voices or messages coming from the inside. We have lost ourselves in the rush of the world. 500 TV channels, the internet, rental videos, two or three jobs, all are conspiring to steal ourselves from us. Kids without a minute of unprogrammed time are racing from school to dance, soccer, drama, debate, one activity after another. We are on a merry-go-round spinning too fast for us to hold on and too fast for us to jump off. In response, we just hunker down and try to get through it. Here's some quick litmus test logic for determining whether you are passively accepting or maybe even choosing behaviors that ignore who you really are, or have been choosing behaviors and life circumstances that naturally flow from your true, authentic self. If you are constantly tired, stressed, emotionally flat, or even depressed, worried, and unhappy, you are ignoring the authentic you and living a go-through-the-motions existence. If your life includes things you profess to hate, yet you continue to do them anyway, that too indicates self-betrayal. If your mind has gotten dull and you just aren't as sharp as you used to be, you aren't getting old or dumb. It's just that your authentic self is getting buried. It's fighting for air. If your emotions are marked by cynicism, apathy, hopelessness, and a lack of optimism, it is because you have abandoned yourself and what matters to you. Ignoring who you truly, authentically are can literally be killing you. Yes, I said literally. If you're ignoring who you really are, your entire system is so distressed that it will wear out and you will be old beyond your years. Forcing yourself to be someone you are not, or stuffing down who you really are, is incredibly taxing. It will tax you so much that it will shorten your life by years and years. I wonder how many obituaries in the newspaper should actually read something like this. Johnson, Robert. Mr. Robert Johnson died yesterday of complications from doing a lifetime of crap that he didn't really want to do. His condition was further complicated because he also failed to do much of any of what he did want to do. Experts report that he died from cramming someone else's idea of life into his body, his brain, and his life. Attempts by Mr. Johnson to fill the voids with work, cars, excessive eating, alcohol, 3 wives, 2,000 rounds of golf, and meeting everyone else's expectancies but his own were dismally unsuccessful. Unfortunately, this all took so much out of Mr. Johnson that he was just worn flat out and died about 20 years too soon. Miserable in his last years, he passed unpeacefully yesterday at his home. He was surrounded by colleagues from the job he hated and family members who were all just as miserable as he was. Okay, that was kind of smart-ass, but I'm not kidding here. Medical experts tell us we can lose as many as 14 years off our life expectancy just by living the kind of prolonged stress I'm describing. This is why I'm telling you, you are playing with fire here. Now, if I'm right, how did all of this happen? Obviously, nobody slipped you a stupid pill, and you aren't some moron who should be in an institution. You just got caught up in this runaway train we call life. You just got used to not being excited. Across time, it just got easier to tell yourself no than it was to tell someone else no. You very likely got some programming that taught you that it was selfish to focus on you. That programming, of course, came from a bunch of other people who would a whole lot rather you focus on them and what they want instead of on you and what you want. Well, duh. Now, let me tell you what I would wish for you to be thinking and saying now, during, and after you listen to this audiobook. I wish you would say to yourself, hey, wait a minute here. Screw the expectancy. Screw living for everyone else. They, whoever they are, don't pay my rent. They don't come home with me at night and bathe my kids and cook my dinner. Why then am I living for what I think some ill-defined bunch of people expect of me? They don't get a vote anymore. I will no longer give my power away. I want it back, and I'm going to use it to be me. I want to make me happy by being true to myself, doing what I care about. If I love music, I want to have music in my life. If I want a career, then I want to find a way to have it. If I'm tired of being fat, I want to prioritize that change into my lifestyle. If I'm not being treated with dignity and respect, that's not okay, not now, not ever. I would rather be happy alone than sick with someone else. If I miss God being in my life because my husband is not spiritual, then he will need to adjust, not me. I'm tired of being scared all the time, scared about kids, money, jobs, boss, parents, and acceptance. I want some upside here. I want to feel alive. I want to feel valued by others and myself. I want to get up in the morning instead of dreading it. I want to have a tremendous clarity about why I'm in this world and what I'm supposed to do while I'm here. I want to realize this is not a dress rehearsal. It is my life, my one shot. I want my kids to know and have all of me instead of some half-assed counterfeit. I want them to really see the real me, my interests, my sense of humor, my values. I believe that children learn what they live, and I want to teach them by example to be proud instead of showing them how to compromise. I want to live with peace, fulfillment, joy, and excitement. I want to be able to finish a day and say that the day felt really good. I want to be able to say that I'm proud of me and proud of what I did today. I want to be able to say that I like who I am and what I'm all about. I want to feel calm and peaceful. I want to feel satisfied. I want to be able to say, I feel good. I want to feel like I belong and deserve just because. Just because. I want to like me for being there for me and putting what's important to me on my priority list. Are you in total shock right now? You're probably thinking I've gone wall-eyed, steer-headed, over-the-top, selfish crazy. Wrong. That's just your politically correct, tell-them-what-they-want-to-hear thinking taking over. How can it be selfish to take care of yourself when you know that it's absolutely true that you cannot give away what you don't have? So if you're being self-righteously selfless, you may be a great, well-intentioned martyr, but regardless of your intentions, you will cheat everyone in your life. Your kids, your spouse, friends, co-workers, your church, you cheat the whole world out of you. Even the Bible tells us to love your neighbor as yourself. You have to take care of yourself before you can take care of anyone else. Whether you know it or not, you may very well have sold out. Typically, when we do that, when we sell out, the things we abandon first are the things that matter only to ourselves. Why? Because that way we don't disappoint anyone else, and God forbid we do that. Remember, when you put yourself last, you are cheating not just yourself, but everyone else around you. Putting you last is not the moral high ground. What I'm telling you here is that you don't just have a right to find your way back to the authentic and true you. You have a responsibility to do it. We're talking about your entire life here. We're talking about the one shot you get in this world. If you are just so fundamentally self-righteous that you can't justify doing this for yourself, then do it for your kids. Do it for your family and everyone you love. Otherwise, you aren't getting you, and they aren't getting you, and that's not okay. When you're through with this audiobook, I want you to be able to say, "I get it. And I'm now there for me and everybody in this world that I care about." I now want to introduce you to a key foundational reality that is the sum and substance of where we are starting in your particular life. And that foundational reality is what I call your personal truth. In order for you ever to effectively figure out and map how to get to where you want to go, you have to first know exactly where you are starting. Where you are now, everything you are, everything you do, begins with and is based on what I call your personal truth. By personal truth, I mean whatever it is that you, at the absolute uncensored core of your being, have come to believe about you. This personal truth is critical because if you believe it, if it is real to you, then it is for you the precise reality that you will live every day. We all have and live our own personal truth, whether we want to or not. If you are honest and truly acknowledging what you really think and feel about yourself in your most candid moments, you know that what I'm saying is true. You know it because you have seen your personal truth come to light when you wished it wouldn't. You may tell me and the rest of the world story A and hope we buy it, but you're telling yourself what you believe to be the real deal, at least as you see it, and we both know that version isn't even almost story A. What you're telling yourself is the story you live. That's the one that jumps up and trips you when the pressure is on. You're always wondering if today is the day that the masquerade will come crashing down and you will be found out. No matter how hard you try, you can never escape your personal truth. It always gets you in the end, which is why it is so critical that you clean it up and get rid of all the doubts and distortion. Yours may be a positive, accurate truth, or it may be a train wreck of misbeliefs grounded in a history of fear, pain, and confusion. Most likely, it's a combination of all of those things. My job, our job, is to get real about those parts of what you believe about yourself that aren't working for you. You cannot hide from nor exceed the boundaries imposed by what you believe you know about yourself on the inside. You cannot play the game of life with confidence and assurance if your personal truth is riddled with fear and apprehension. Your personal best will never be better than the one your personal truth dictates for you. If it is distorted and fictional, be assured that it will show itself at the worst and most inopportune times because that self-critical voice is relentlessly whispering in your ear. This personal truth is a big deal, a huge deal. If you don't get yours straight, it will ruin even the best laid plans to revitalize your life and everything in it. As we move forward, don't dare cheat yourself with some deluded thinking because you don't have the guts to tell yourself out loud what it is that you really believe on the inside. Now, I'll just confess that about half the time, I don't even know what the experts who talk about and write about our lives mean when they throw around words like self-realization, inner self, actualized self, or being centered, or whatever other buzzwords they manufacture to sound smart. A lot of it is just beyond me, I'm afraid. Way too fancy and convoluted for this old country boy. But to my simple way of thinking, who you are in this world, who you become, all boils down to this personal truth, this set of beliefs that you have about you. It is so critical because it sets up and defines what I call your self-concept. We will talk in more detail about the authentic self and the fictional self in the next chapter. In the meantime, just understand that you only have one self. But it is one that, like a chameleon, takes on the emotional colors of the history and environment in which it has existed. Your self-concept moves up and down a continuum, anchored on one end by the authentic self-image, who you were created to be, and on the other by a fictional and distorted self-image, who the world has told you to be. Where you are on that continuum depends on what your external experiences in life have been and what personal truth you have created from observing and interpreting yourself across the years. This personal truth and the self-concept that flows from it is the DNA of your personality. Know this DNA and you know your starting place in the journey to reconnect with your life. As we move forward, I intend to show you how whatever your DNA is came to be. I will then lead you to deconstruct those elements that are just plain wrong and have not served you well. I will also lead you through the steps necessary to reconstruct your authentic self in a way to ensure your success. Let's get busy. Now, I hate to start off sounding critical the first rattle out of the box, but if we're going to make a difference in your life, I have to tell you the truth as I see it. As the old saying goes, you can BS your friends and I'll BS mine, but let's not BS each other. What you're about to read is my view of how most people live. When I say live, I mean their personal, private experience of life, not the image they project. No one will know if I'm right about you, but you. I'm not asking you to substitute my judgment for your own, but I am asking you to weigh what I have to say very, very carefully. I'm also asking that you be totally honest with yourself, even if it is scary to admit certain things about yourself and your life. Remember, you cannot change what you do not acknowledge. Here's how I see it. If your life is like that of most people in this world, and in fact like mine used to be, you may be, whether you know it or not, smooth out of control. It may not look that way to other people, but so much for appearances. We don't care about what others want for you right now. Our focus has to be totally on what you want. There'll be plenty of time to balance it all later. Like the duck that looks so smooth and graceful as it glides across the glassy pond, you're doing okay at a surface level. But think about what that same duck is doing below the waterline. It's kicking and reaching in chaotic contrast to its seemingly effortless surface appearance. Such is life. Such is your life. Just for the sake of argument, fantasize with me for a moment. I wonder what you might choose for yourself if all of a sudden you could just rewrite the script of your life from as early as you might want right up until now. If you hadn't been pulled into the suck hole of life with all of its messages, traps of responsibilities and expectancies, if you hadn't inherited the status quo, if you weren't born into a certain family and station in life and weren't buried so deep that you seemed to have no choices, what would you choose? What would you choose if you weren't financially strapped, for example, living paycheck to paycheck, or didn't have so many people depending on you? If you weren't chronically overweight and tired, how would you live differently? If instead of being trapped, you had the opportunity to shape your life around who you really are and what really defines you and matters to you, what would your life be like? What if you questioned what difference it really makes which car you drive, where you live, how much money you earn, or why it matters whether some person likes or doesn't like you? Given a second chance, would you change things? Or would you decide that the familiar was safer and you'd just stick with what you had? Would you grab the second chance, or would you choke at the last minute, afraid to venture into something new? Would you settle for what you have because you fear that there is nothing else out there for you? You're about to find out that these are not just hypothetical questions. You're about to discover that you have a whole lot more choice about what happens in your life than you could ever imagine. You're about to learn how to unravel your past in such a way that it no longer can control you and your future. This is a journey that begins with you refusing to accept and even make excuses for you and your life. If you don't have what you want and need, you must be willing to say so, and say so with conviction. These days, when you ask someone, "Who are you?" you'll hear a lot of them answer, "Well, I'm a mom. I'm a doctor. I'm a plumber. I'm a wife. I'm an accountant. I'm the mayor. I live in Beverly Hills." They define themselves by their jobs or their role. They answer with what they do because they can't answer with who they are. They can't tell you who they are because they don't know who they are. It's true, you exist at many levels, and the behavioral plane is one of them. What you do is certainly a factor in who you are. But there is a whole other level of existence distinct from what you do that is the real, true, genuine sum and substance of who you are. For lack of a better word, that real, true, genuine identity is what I've been referring to as your authentic self. Are you in touch with this authentic self? Do you get what it is? Or is this just a bunch of psychological talk? Wouldn't it be tragic if a very different, vibrant you was buried under a pile of worldly to-do lists and you were mindlessly accepting the world's expectancies? There is an authentic self within you. Maybe you're living a life that reflects that authentic self, and maybe you aren't. Maybe it is buried. Interesting questions, don't you think? What if? The authentic self is the you that can be found at your absolute core. It is the part of you that is not defined by your job or your function or your role. It is the composite of all of your unique gifts, skills, abilities, interests, talents, insights, and wisdom. It is all of the strengths and values that are uniquely yours and need expression versus what you have been programmed to believe that you are supposed to be and do. It is the you that flourished unselfconsciously in those times in your life when you felt happiest and most fulfilled. It is the you that existed before and remains when life's pain, experiences, and expectancies are stripped away. It is the you that existed before you were scarred by your parents' divorce or wounded when that cute boy in school made fun of your braces or your dress. It is the you that existed before your spouse demeaned you in argument after argument, while you just took it for fear of being left. It is the you that existed before you were in fact left, abandoned by your spouse or even your children. It is the you that wants to require you to be more than you are, that doesn't even know what it is to settle or sell out. Not living faithfully to your authentic self creates a void, an ever-present feeling that you are incomplete. You find yourself wondering whether you should be doing something different with your life. There's a restlessness, a yearning emptiness that won't go away. It's as if there's a hole in your soul. You may try to fill that hole in any number of ways, by smoking or drinking, by incessant working, by overinvesting yourself in a mate or your children. Maybe you sit down and eat a chocolate cake with a half gallon of ice cream. Maybe you have an affair. You have kids. You get divorced. You get married. You get a new job. You cast about to find something, anything, to fill that hole in your heart. We need to be candid about what is at stake here. Living in this world with assigned roles rather than an authentic self drains you of the critical life energy you need for the constructive pursuit of things you truly value. By contrast, once you start living your authentic self, then all of that diverted energy, all of that otherwise wasted life energy, starts speeding you down the highway of your life. You gain speed, efficiency, and smoothness. You become so much more successful in your life by being who you want and need to be. To understand the energy it takes to suppress your authentic self, think back to happy childhood memories of going swimming in the summer. If you were lucky enough to have a beach ball, it was always great fun to try to hold the ball underwater. In fact, if you were like me, you got hours of pleasure from this intellectually stimulating pursuit. Remember how that beach ball used to constantly fight to break through the surface of the water, then pop up into the sunshine? Remember how much effort and energy it took to hold it under as it squeaked and wriggled from side to side, trying to avoid your suppressing hands and claim its natural buoyancy? Think about how tired you became as the seconds wore on. Isn't this exactly what happens when you deny your authentic self its natural expression? Just imagine the exhaustion you have accumulated fighting that same fight every minute of every hour of every day of your life. Now, let's think for a minute about how much energy it takes to live the fictional life I've been talking about. Imagine pushing a huge boulder up a long, steep hill. Feel the weight, the bulk of that boulder fighting you all the way as you struggle and sweat to get the job done. Now, picture yourself at the top of the hill, giving that boulder one last shove. It slips easily away from you and tumbles down the other side. Compare the two different tasks. At the end of a long, exhausting day, you might get one boulder up the hill, whereas you could roll 1,000 boulders down that same hill in the same amount of time and still feel like you were just getting started. That's because rolling them downhill would be consistent with the natural order of the universe. The same principle holds true in your life. You have certain core traits, qualities, gifts, talents, needs, and desires. You have a core purpose for being in this world. By suppressing who you were meant and need to be, you're doing something entirely unnatural. If you're living for the fictional self, then you're unnecessarily trying to push a boulder uphill. You're draining precious life energy in a battle against nature, energy that you could otherwise be spending on what you are really all about. This audiobook is about letting go of that beach ball. It's about stopping the mindless and draining performance of all the roles you would never choose but yet have been assigned. To do any less would be to cheat you mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. As I said in the obituary in Chapter 1, the consequences for your health are undeniable. It is a well-known medical fact that whether or not an individual gets sick is determined much more by the vulnerability of his or her immune system than by exposure to the disease itself. It is also well documented that stress, both emotional and physical, greatly depletes the immune system. Now, there could be no greater stress than that generated by denying the authentic self. Because your life energy is being diverted, and therefore depleted, you are compromised mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. What about the long-term cumulative effects of all of this? I wasn't just being dramatic when I said denying who you really are can kill you. In his book, Real Age, Dr. Michael Roizen points out that for every year that you live with high stress, you shorten your life expectancy by 3 years. According to his research, if you don't have an outlet for your true passion, it costs you another 6 years. If someone is draining your energy due to constant turmoil and conflict, you lose another 8 years. In fact, if you add up the number of years that might be lost because of stress and living in the fictional self, it would be 32 years. Think about that. 32 years is more than a third of your expected lifespan. All because you choose to continue living in your fictional cage rather than discovering and living your life in congruence with your authentic self. It's very important that I establish a clear target in your mind as to what an authentically dominated life is. One way to bring home the experience I'm looking for is by example, through people who live and radiate an authentically directed life. I encountered just such a person in my childhood. His name was Gene Knight. I'll tell you right up front, I did not grow up in a sophisticated blue blood type family or environment. Gene Knight, one of my icons for authenticity, was a bootlegger. I could have made up some more respectable occupation for him, but hey, it is what it is. In the mid to late 1950s, we lived in a really small town in Oklahoma where a lot of counties were dry. Gene was part of the primitive network that supplied that for which there was plenty of demand in those counties. Case after case of Jim Beam and every other kind of whiskey you could imagine. Looking back, it's clear to me now that Gene's real dream was to be a barnstormer. But he was about 30 years too late for that. So, instead of barnstorming, people paid him to fly cases of whiskey all over Oklahoma. He could have just as happily been a bush pilot in Africa or flown medical supplies into the Amazon jungle. The point is that Gene Knight was a born pilot. When he climbed into that cockpit, there could be no doubt that Gene was doing what he absolutely, unequivocally, passionately loved. I was probably 8 or 9 years old when I first saw Gene climb out of his plane in the middle of a cold and wind-blown field. We always had to meet Gene out in the country to stay away from the law. It may sound hokey, but this was a guy who could have passed for Errol Flynn. He had coal black hair, wore a leather flying jacket, and stood about 6'4". With an air of absolutely infectious joy, he would talk about flying and his eyes would just beam. He loved his job, loved his life, and loved the people he encountered along the way. Eventually, the day came when Gene took me up for a ride. Let me tell you, Buck Rogers had nothing on me. As soon as we were airborne, I told myself, I'm going to be a pilot. And just as soon as I came of age, I got my license. I've been flying my entire life as a direct result of Gene Knight's influence. Now, more than 40 years later, with the perspective of hindsight, I recognize that Gene never made much money. His plane was old and slow and dilapidated. I know that he, just like my dad and all the other men out there helping to unload the whiskey, had bills to pay and promises to keep. But the unforgettable truth about Gene was that he lived to his passion. He didn't live to pay his bills. He was born to fly, and he knew it. He loved what he was doing, and he liked himself. And he had no need to strut around. He was a humble man, but a contagiously happy one. The life he lived was his currency. His income came in the form of taking that plane aloft and setting it down in the midst of a cotton patch miles from the nearest airport to do his task and see his friends. Every time he hopped down from that plane, I'm convinced he couldn't wait to hop back in, regardless of the destination. I knew Gene for 35 years, and I can tell you that he kept flying right up until the year he passed away. He died a happy and fulfilled man. Enough about others. Now it's time to talk specifically about you. Don't you think it's time to give yourself a turn? In fact, don't you know it's past time? I suspect that you take care of everyone and everything else in your life first, and almost always get to you and your needs last, if at all. Yet the fact that you are listening to this tells me that you must feel a need. At some level, you are ready to do something different with your life, and I want to seize on that readiness. First, you need some guided self-diagnosis. Answering questions about yourself, the right questions, can help you take a step back from